Sir Bradley Wiggins is the instantly recognisable cycling legend who is coming to Cambridge's Corn Exchange on Tuesday the 24th of September. An evening with is a tour of his life where Bradley shares tales, memorabilia and career highlights. Hello and welcome to Cambridge 105 Radio, Bradley.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Do I need to call you sir or is Bradley okay?
No, I'm not shallow enough to be called sir. Don't worry about that.
Well, it's lovely to talk to you. Now, you won the Tour de France 7 years ago in 2012, and you were the first British rider to do so. That is quite something. What sticks out for you about that time? Can you remember back? Is there specific events or things that happened during the 21 stages, how you were feeling?
It's amazing to think it was 7 years ago. It's all a bit of a blur, really. The thing I remember the most was because we were so focused on the Olympics afterwards, that we didn't celebrate the moment. So the kind of moment passed us by because we all flew straight back to Surrey. And 4 days later, I was ringing the bell in the Olympic Stadium. And then, of course, we had the road race. And then I won the time trial. So, you know, focus quickly turned to the Olympics. So the tour we had to kind of forget about and put in the drawer, really. So I have no real memories of the tour, more so the Olympics, because we'd started that tour always knowing that the Olympics was going to follow us behind.
Yeah. So how many times did you attempt the Tour de France before winning it?
I think I did four times. Four occasions before that, yeah.
Did you think at the time, I'm going to win it? Do you remember thinking this is going really well?
Yeah, I think that season, I was unbeaten that season. And I'd had a pretty good run for 18 months before that. I'd finished fourth in 2009. I didn't have a great race in 2010, but learned a lot from it and came back stronger in 11 and won all the pre-races for that and crashed out, broke my collarbone, and then came back in 12 and managed to get the victory.
So you've put cycling on the map, as it were. You won BBC Personality of the Year. You went on to win 5 gold medals, among other successes. How is cycling on the road very different to competing, obviously, in a track and in the Olympics?
Well, it's hugely different. The races we won on the track and the race I won in Rio was, 4 minutes long or 3:50 at the time. Whereas, the tour, you're doing 5, 6, 7 hours day in, day out for 3 weeks. And the demands of it are quite different because it's a lot about weight and climbing mountains for hours on end. But if you're able to transfer that ability and that natural raw engine from the track, which is a good marker and a good indicator, much like Mo Farah doing the 5,000 and the 10,000 and then switching to marathons, you've got a basic engine there that, if adapted right, can achieve great things. Like Geraint Thomas has done, he's similar, came from the track program with me. It's doable.
Do you prefer one over the other? I mean, what's better, winning the medals or kind of winning the endurance?
Well, I sort of started by watching Chris Boardman in Barcelona. Growing up in a council estate in London, watching Boardman win the Olympics in Barcelona, and was incredibly inspired by it. And so the Olympics has always had a special place in my heart, really. And the tour's great, but even now when I look back, I still sort of I don't believe that I won the same tour that I watched all my idols win as a kid, because again, kids from Kilburn aren't supposed to win the tour. You're supposed to come from warmer climes and have a tan and not have milk white legs. It's something that you always imagine other people to do. And when you do it, you sort of think, is this the same race that I watched all these other greats do? And so, whereas the Olympics, when you grow up watching the likes of Sally Gunnell, Linford Christie and all those people winning gold, they're the people next door. So, it's that sense of, well, if they can do it, I can do it.
You have talked a lot about your background and obviously where you come from and being a London lad. And how did you get into cycling? Where did the love come from?
Well, my father was a professional cyclist and left home when I was one. So that was the introduction. And he was always glorified by my mother as a sportsman. And so I grew up knowing my father did it. And that was where the initial introduction came from. But then obviously you need a role model after that and an inspiration. And I watched Chris Boardman win the Olympics. And I remember watching it at 12 years of age and thinking, I'd love to do that one day. I was very aspirational as a kid and very, kind of knew what I wanted to be better than where I was, the environment I was growing up in. And uh, you know, I never imagined that 12 years after watching that I'd win that event with Chris Borben at trackside with me, helping me. So it's a bit of a fairy tale story, really, which I talk about on the tour, really, the whole kind of childhood growing up, the environment I grew up in, which is quite difficult. And also growing up as a, you know, as a 12-year-old in the late 80s and early 90s in inner city London, and cycling not being like it is today, and the sort of challenges I had to overcome in order at that age to avoid peer pressure and crime, and things like that. You know, it's quite a tough period, really. I still don't know where that came from within me to do that. And it sort of makes for an interesting story. I can tell it very candidly now, very openly, because I've told it enough times and I'm very
detached.
I've dealt with it emotionally and stuff, you know, but it can be quite an interesting story to some people.
I mean, I imagine it wasn't what, you know, other people were doing at that time. I mean, what would you say to kids now if they have a bike, just get on it and go out or go join a club, or how would you inspire
them?
Well,
yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, as elite as the sport has got, then obviously the competition's got greater and the equipment, and it's become more expensive. So, you know, it unfortunately, it has become about, you know, having access to finance. So it's not, you know, we had to beg, borrow and steal back when I started, and that was good enough. You know, your ability was enough now, where there's so much emphasis now on marginal gains and having equipment and all that. And I feel for some of the youngsters, but at the same time, you know, the freedom that a bike gives you, and we all have access to a bike, you know, that's what I initially fell in love with, and then I'm still in love with it today.
Now tell us a bit about the tour, the show. So you're obviously going around the country talking, you've got stuff to show. What can people expect if they come?
Well, I'd like to think people will probably come with a preconception of me, a public perception of me, which I think might surprise some people as the person I am now. I'm not Sir Wiggo anymore. 7 years ago, sat on the throne. And thank God, you know, I'm 3 years into retirement. You know, you should change. You should become a better person. And also, I'm quite a historian of the sport as well. So, you know, it's not an egotistical trip for me to rant about myself for an hour. It's about telling the story, the history of cycling, and showing the artifacts to go with that I own. And how we all came to the place we are today, and why we're here, really, because cycling hasn't always been, you know, borderline national sport like it is today.
I mean, I would imagine it's a very interesting listen, and it is going to be quite intimate venues you're playing at. So, I mean, is there music to go with it? I mean, you're quite into your kind of modelling.
Yeah, I think it will be all encompassing of my personality, you know. And I think it's an entertainment experience and an informative one at that. Because at the end of the day, people are, you know, I'm very privileged that people pay their hard-earned money to come and watch me talk for an hour and a half. So, you know, you want to give the, you know, it's a show at the end of the day. But it's not contrived, it's not made up, it's authentic, and it is what it is. It's a story. And you know, I think, you know, it's a privilege to be able to talk about it. I never imagined that when I started back then in the early 90s that I'd be touring the country talking about a sport that was a minority sport back then.
It is very, very popular now. I mean, how is your body? Is it battered and bruised still, or do you still exercise?
No.
How do you do anything for fun?
I'm institutionalized to do something every day. So I do quite a lot of running now and go to the gym, and I enjoy training. I enjoy the, you know, the mental health benefits of that, and the social interaction side of it, and it's a great thing, you know. And I try and encourage it in my family, and you know, it's almost like a daily ritual and a daily routine that, you know, sort of you have to do, really, as part of, you know, I think in this day and age, you know, with the sort of the fears about mental health and stuff, it's just good for people to get out the door. You know, one of the most basic things, just get out for a walk for an hour, 2 hours. Because it's the best form of activity, just walking or even just pedaling a bike.
Being outside in nature, yeah. Now, I know you want to put something back into the community. I mean, that you're in the news at the moment about doing a social worker degree. Is that right?
Yeah, I need to get that degree to study the particular area of social care that I want to get involved with. I'm very passionate about it. I never thought it would become national news. I mean, you know, it's just something that has been very close to my heart the last few years through personal experience in my own childhood. I witnessed some horrific things when I was a kid that weren't traumatic to me, that I was normalised to, which is quite sad, really. And I realised that lots of kids grow up in the environments they grow up in, and they can't help that. And if I'm going to use this knighthood and medals and tours and all that, I want to use it for the greater good, really. And I want to help kids. Mm. And that's the specific area that I want to work in. But obviously, this is a long journey for me now. Mm. And, you know, I want to redefine myself. I don't want to just be known as, you know, you're that cyclist, aren't you, for the rest of my life.
Yeah. So you're not going to come to Cambridge to do the degree then?
No, I'm not. I'm not educated enough.
Oh, give over. Now,
I've got tattoos. You're not allowed to go to Cambridge if you've got tattoos.
Is that right? There's a big cycling scene in Cambridge, I have to say. Near where I live, we see cyclists all the time.
It's a very cycling-centric part of the world, which is why I wanted to bring the tour there. I was very fortunate to do the Cambridge Book Festival last year there, and it was an absolutely brilliant crowd that came along. So it was one of my things that I wanted to go back to Cambridge and bring this tour there.
Yeah, well, we're very lucky to have you come back. So tickets are priced from £32.50. You can get a VIP package, which includes a meet and greet. We'll give details of the number and everything they can call to get tickets when they become available after this interview. But Bradley, I just want to say thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure, and wish you all the best and all the success in the future with whatever you go on to do next.